Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science? Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
Rules.
And ethics. And everything else.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye, and this is the show where science rules. Now, everyone, it's a call-in show, so if you want to be on the show, and I hope a few of you do, please go to AskBillNye.com and type on in. I want to hear what's on your mind. I want you to call me, and we'll talk about science and its rules. It'll be fun. So if you're like me, and I know I am, you have watched some of the Chernobyl episodes on HBO where it goes back, with British accents in English, it goes back over what happened in Russia when this nuclear reactor was allowed to explode. And it's quite a miniseries, and it's instilled a lot of fear in people. It's brought up old worries. So it's important, really, though, to understand what's involved in a nuclear reactor, what might be involved in a nuclear accident, and how radiation affects us all every day anyway. And I'm once again joined, of course, by science writer, editor, and dear friend, really, for reals, Corey S. Powell. Greetings, Corey.
Hello, Bill. Wonderful to be here. I'm feeling kind of rad today, if I may. It's a bad pun.
Well, there you go. But with that said,
yes,
Lauren Jackson is the Associate Professor of Radiation Oncology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine.
The School of Medicine, you say?
At the University of Maryland. And she is the Deputy Director of Translational Radiation Sciences and Director of the Medical Countermeasure Program at the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland, here in the United States, planet Earth. Dr. Jackson, welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
See, I'm telling you, your work sounds rad.
It is. It's radonculus.
It's
radonculus.
Radonculus.
Radonculus, like redunk.
Redunk.
Only radiation. You know, radiation is a word we toss around. First of all, in physics, light is radiation, microwaves are radiation, x-rays are radiation. For you, what is radiation?
So I specifically study ionizing radiation. So ionizing radiation essentially is high energy. It can eject an electron.
It's a particle?
It's a particle. It can be particles or it's x-rays, gamma rays, essentially on that side of the spectrum.
So it hits an atom, jolts up an electron.
Yep. Hits it out of orbit. And then those can interact with biological materials. So your DNA, proteins. And that can cause
your
damage.
Cells.
In the cells.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so how did you get into radiation?
I fell into it.
That does not sound good.
Completely accidentally. So I actually started out as a political science, you know, very interested in political science, nuclear nonproliferation. And then I became more and more interested in the science world, genetics.
Radiation research is an unusual field to research, yes?
It is.
So you study the effects of radiation, especially on people.
Yeah, that's great, on biological systems.
And a human being a biological system.
My main thing is actually very high doses of radiation, life-threatening doses of radiation.
Like from a nuclear weapon.
From a nuclear weapon or a radiological dispersal device. That's it. I like the sound effects.
A radioactive commercial device?
A radiological dispersal device. So a dirty weapon.
A dirty weapon.
Or
somebody
dirty
steals nuclear material.
Yeah, exactly.
Puts it with a conventional explosive.
Correct.
Floats it in a weather balloon over Chicago, sets the thing off, yep. And everything sucks.
Or puts it in a subway somewhere.
Right. Now, this is something that people talked about a lot in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. I haven't heard so much about it, but I gather sort of outside of the media, this is still a very active concern.
It is. And so you're right. There's been this growing worry amongst the government since 9/11.
Security professionals,
yes. Counterterrorism experts that, you know, there could be – that we know that terrorists are trying to acquire these types of materials. And so there's a huge effort to stop them from acquiring the materials. But the government is also putting an effort to, you know, be able to medically manage and treat people if there was – you know, if there was an incident.
See, I'm of a certain age. I grew up going into the hallway of the elementary school, getting on your knees.
Duck and cover.
Yeah, which is a real thing that we really did. The premise being somehow after a nuclear weapon went off nearby, we'd all live through it, just go to the basement. My family had taken steps for it to make the laundry room into a fallout shelter. But I got to thinking about it as – you know, in high school or whatever, this is ridiculous. You'll never live through it. But your claim is you kind of could.
You could. Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, there's different types of, you know, nuclear weapons. There's, you know, the conventional nuclear weapons, which would be very high doses, large, you know, scale destruction. And then there's the radiological dispersal devices or improvised nuclear devices. And those there's much more likelihood of survival, particularly within the fallout zone.
What is fallout? That's a word I've heard since I was a kid. Nuclear fallout.
Radioactive fallout. So it's these radionuclides that
What's a radionuclide? Doggone it, doctor.
Basically radioactive material.
Pieces of the bomb left over?
It's not really pieces of the bomb left over.
The dust has gotten radioactive.
The dust becomes radioactive because these radionuclides attach to the dust.
Why do they do that? They just do?
Yeah. Just it's physics.
No, but I mean, is there some electrostatic kind of attraction between?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
probably.
You set off a weapon on the conventional weapon, if I understand it, on the ground. This part I can understand. And there's debris.
Yep.
A crater.
Yep.
What I meant was and so that's carrying dust up into the air.
That's correct.
And the radiation from the nuclear explosion causes the dust to become radioactive or particles of that radioactive material attached to the dust.
Correct.
So now we have a sky full of radioactive dust.
Correct. And so that's going to fall to the ground.
It's going to fall.
It's going to fall.
To the ground.
Correct.
And it'll be outside. And so it'll be fall out.
That's correct. And so you can protect yourself from this fallout by basically getting inside, staying inside for at least 24 hours, so sheltering in place.
And so this is the presumption that in a day, the dust will fall into the ground.
Correct.
Wow.
And so you can significantly mitigate or reduce your risk for being exposed to radiation.
I want to clarify something about this 24-hour waiting period. How much of that is you're waiting for the dust to settle out so you don't breathe it? And how much of that is actually waiting for the radiation dose to go down because the most radioactive things are decaying during that time?
So it's mostly waiting for it to go down.
The dust to hit the ground.
Yeah, the dust to hit the ground.
Corey, you're referring to so-called daughter elements, right?
Yes, I am, of course. I have two daughters, so I'm always thinking about these things.
Of course you are. But where the uranium explodes, fissions— And it creates all these other elements we see down the periodic table that are also giving off neutrons and electrons and things like that there.
Right.
That will mess with your DNA when they hit you.
Yep. So the initial, you know, explosion, you know, this is a very quick event. And so people can get exposed to external radiation due to this high dose of exposure. Yep. Yeah. And these people could be at risk for bone marrow suppression, which is similar to what cancer patients might get with chemotherapy. It's the same kind of biological effects that the white blood cells that fight infection can be lost. And so people can be at risk for infection. And so these are higher doses of radiation exposure. But then there's the second part that's the fallout. And that's where, you know, we have drugs that can treat the bone marrow suppression. Bone marrow, if you can get people triaged into medical hospitals for treatment. But the internal contamination and the exposures from the fallout can be significantly reduced if you get inside.
So
there's two types of radiation exposures. There's external radiation exposure, and then there's internal radiation exposure.
Where I've swallowed radioactive something?
Correct. So, for example, for thyroid cancer, sometimes we give them, you know, radioactive iodine. And so it would be – it's very similar. You know, it's the same type of iodine radioactive that after Fukushima would have been released and end up on the ground. And the half-life of that is 8 days. And so over, you know, a couple months, it's going to basically be eliminated from the environment. One of the things that you want to do almost immediately is – basically stop the food sources from those areas, making it into, you know, the cycle.
Let's go to the phones.
We have Tiffany on the line. Tiffany, are you there?
Yes, I sure am. Hi there.
Greetings. Where are you calling from?
From a sunny, beautiful Detroit, Michigan, which it will be that way for probably another 4 hours.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Well, we'll get our producer, Jordan, on the email, and she'll try to extend the sunny period for a couple hours. But before we do what is your question?
Okay, so I was wondering, should I be as concerned about radiation / nuclear plants as I currently am? I briefly learned about the nuclear reactor accident in Chernobyl as a kid. But now that I've been watching the HBO miniseries about it and kind of researching the long and short-term effects of radiation poisoning, I'm a little bit terrified. And so given the accident in Chernobyl and Fukushima, both of those nuclear disasters happened in my lifetime, I'm really just wondering how this type of thing can keep happening, number one. But also, is there anything that we can do on the ground to protect ourselves? I don't think we're in a blast zone or anything like that here in Detroit, but it is definitely something that my partner and I worry about a little bit, more me than anyone.
No, that's a really, really good point. I think you and a lot of people are in the same boat, especially after Fukushima a few years ago. So I would say you don't need to worry. I think that I and a lot of other people in this field have really been trying to push, you know, radiation risk communication. And, you know, there were the psychological impacts of those types of incidents are actually much, much worse than the actual incidents themselves.
So here we are at Fukushima. We had an earthquake, tidal wave or tsunami.
That's right.
Screwed up the reactor. They kind of buried it in cement. Is that
right?
They
did. Yeah.
And so very little radiation escaped. I mean,
from a health perspective, the increased lifetime risk for anyone who is in that area, relative increase of developing cancer at some point in their lifetime over just the natural background risk is less than 0.0001%.
It's negligible. Yeah.
It's negligible. Yeah. And so basically there were no health effects and from Fukushima, both, you know, after Chernobyl, a lot of people developed what we call about 134 of the workers developed what we call acute radiation sickness. And this is immediately life threatening. And out of those 24 individuals ended up dying from radiation illness. The others were successfully treated.
So what is, how did they die? Not to get too morbid here, but how do you die from radiation sickness?
From infection, from bleeding. That case, you know, you had the, it was a volatile accident. You know, it was a fire. And so it was a little bit different. With Fukushima, you know, there was, there were the amounts of radiation that was released. There's no health effects from that. Nobody.
They cut it off in time.
They did, and the doses weren't high enough. And that's where containment is really, you know,
containment
it was contained.
Of an accident.
And yet, a lot of people still worried about Fukushima as a radioactive disaster.
Hang on, you said the health effects were something that the bad health effects came from something else. What is that?
From
you mean the psychological effects?
The psychological effects. That's correct. And so, after Fukushima, there is a higher suicide rate amongst individuals from the Fukushima prefecture than the surrounding prefectures.
Prefecture is Japanese like government for county or what have you.
That's right. And so, you know, in that area, because there's what we call radiation stigma. And so, hey, I don't want to touch you. Or alcohol is, you know, people start drinking because
people don't want to socialize with you, so you start drinking.
Yeah.
So you're saying nobody died of radiation, but a lot of people or some number of people died essentially of despair.
Of despair, yeah. Yeah. And so that's actually when you're talking about those types of accidents, you know, that's really where the major issue is. And so we've been pushing that, you know, you need to educate the public before these types of incidents happen because that's the major health outcomes.
So, Lauren, you have furrowed brow.
I do.
As you describe this. No, seriously, you're expressing concern. So what do you do to educate people? What are you all, by you all, at the University of Maryland, at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, what are you doing to educate people?
That's a good, Twitter's been, I think there's a lot of people on Twitter trying to get the information out there. I see a lot on LinkedIn, but I don't think we're doing a good job out of it. You know, a lot of people, I just came back from this meeting I mentioned to you in Munich, and it's certainly something that people are talking about, and it's becoming more and more, I think, relevant. You know, or more recognized that people know that we need to better educate the public of what the real risks are. But I don't think that we've really put in the necessary steps to do that.
So you're talking about health risks, right? Mm-hmm. So I am also of an age where it'd be very common to see somebody with a card table at the airport or on a street corner with a slogan, more nukes, less kooks.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he or she meant fewer kooks. But that aside,
I didn't study English for a reason.
No, but that's all right. That aside, the premise being that people who understand nuclear energy are not afraid of it.
No, that's correct.
Right? Yeah,
that's correct. It's very safe. Overall, it's extremely safe.
Yeah, well, let me say it as an engineer, though. You, Tiffany, you referred to Chernobyl and Fukushima, but I'm of an age where we had Three Mile Island, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where nothing happened, but something almost happened, and people did panic. And the whole thing, everybody, the problem is if 430-some commercial nuclear power plants, excluding military reactors, and three of them have big problems, that's just not just not that good. Three out of 400 is pretty bad. You wouldn't get in a car with a 300 or 400 chance of crashing. So that's why people are concerned. And then
I haven't thought about it that way.
But wait a second. I see some disagreement coming from our expert here. I mean,
oh, but plus that seems as an engineer, it seems like in France, 80% of the electricity comes from nuclear power. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had any accidents, although those power plants are aging, and what are we going to do with the aging power plant? That aside. So, Tiffany, do you still have a fear of nuclear power, or did Dr. Jackson just allay that fear, set it aside immediately, and you are now a happy Michigander?
Well, you know, I trust no one, you know, so no, I'm kidding. No, that's really
helpful. Like a scientist.
That's really helpful because part of it is, like what you said, we're not educated on that. And I went to pretty good schools growing up, and they kind of touched on things, but really made it a point to kind of skim over things because I think they thought it would be a little too over the average person's head. And I wish that we had more people talking to us like this and the type of transparency that you guys are giving, because that's really helpful.
Well, thank you.
There are other things to worry about in Detroit.
One or two.
Yeah, so that aside,
if
there's a dirty bomb, let's say you're on vacation. What did I say earlier? Chicago. I mentioned Chicago because it's in the middle of the electrical grid. And there's a nuclear event. Stay inside for 24 hours. Do not go running outside to go find your kids, strangely enough.
That's right. That's right.
Have shelter in place at the preschool and at home.
That's right. You want to get inside a still reinforced concrete structure. If that would be primary, go to a windowless basement. If you don't have a windowless basement, just go to the middle of, you know, any building that you can. Don't leave.
For a day.
For one day. And then stay tuned.
Is like taping up windows or putting blankets over windows, is that also helpful? Like if you're in a basement?
And strip, you know, if you've been outside, take off your clothes.
Because they're carrying the radioactive dust.
Exactly.
And I remember the whole thing was these guys were required to take a shower.
Yeah.
Right?
Rinse.
Get the dust off.
That's right. Because a lot of those particles, they're what we call alpha or beta emitters. They can't penetrate the skin. And so you might get skin burns, or if it's an alpha emitter, the only way you're going to get damage is by inhaling or ingesting it. And so if you remove your clothes, you can really minimize.
And hold your breath.
No, get inside.
So alpha and beta are they're particles. A beta is an electron, and alpha is basically a helium nucleus. So these are particles that can't travel very far.
That's right.
Cool. And Tiffany, this is a great call. And I think, Tiffany, you've brought up a question that almost everybody has wondered who lives anywhere near a nuclear power plant.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Science Rules is back.
So what is the deal with iodine? It's since I was a kid, iodine tablets for
potassium iodide,
for the nuclear attack.
So your thyroid takes up iodine, particularly children.
Where do I get my iodine?
Milk.
Milk
can be one place. Mm-hmm. And so basically, so if you ingest radioactive iodine from milk sources or something that's been contaminated, then what you want to do is take potassium iodide because it basically floods the system.
So your system takes up the pill you take, iodide, rather than the radioactive iodide.
Correct. So you just flood the system.
You flood your system, Corey.
But the only thing that potassium iodide pills do is really prevent the risk of thyroid cancers, which is one special case, and is really predominantly children that would be at risk.
Do we have – you just offhandedly say, we got drugs, Corey. Got drugs when your immune system is suppressed. So are these drugs sitting around in emergency rooms waiting for a nuclear? They are?
Yeah.
These are my
like
tax dollars at work?
Yeah, they're our tax dollars at work. They're in warehouses. So the federal government has put in over $6 billion to develop what we call medical countermeasures for seaborne threat agents. So these are chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear agents.
Oh, so that's the acronym, seaborne.
Seaborne, yep. And so over the past 15 years.
So $6 billion over 15 years?
Yeah.
That's not that much money as money is spent.
It's not. And when you think about defense, you know how much money is spent in defense, et cetera. It's not. But it has led to the approvals of 3 new drugs for treatment of radiation sickness.
Well, why not give everybody in the U.S. a bottle of the drugs?
Couple reasons. Not everybody would need it. You don't want to just give everybody drugs that can, you know, potentially have side effects. These have very low side effects, we know, because they're given to cancer patients to treat side effects of chemotherapy, for example. But they are in warehouses and they are in hospitals, and they would be used in the aftermath of a radiological or nuclear event.
This is also spectacularly hypothetical. It's just so crazy dangerous, it seems.
You said 3 drugs. What are the 3 drugs?
So the 3 drugs are Neupogen, Neulasta, both from Amgen, and Leukine from Partner Therapeutics. And all 3 of those are now approved. These drugs basically stimulate recovery of the white blood cells that fight infection. And so you reduce that window or narrow that window that people are at risk for life-threatening infection.
Because that's what kills you.
This part, yep. That's so in some cases.
Yeah, how does radiation kill you, Corey? Doctor?
I think that would be a much better question for our expert.
There are several ways. The first is, you know, this bone marrow suppression that can occur. And so you lose your ability to fight infection. And so people die from infection. The other is that it also, radiation can affect your vasculature. And so it can cause, and also a blood cell type called platelets that help blood to clot.
Clot, yeah. Vasculature it affects your blood vessels.
Yeah, it affects your blood vessels and it affects your ability to clot. And so people can essentially begin bleeding. And if they don't have platelets, they can die from essentially a trauma-induced hemorrhage.
You get cut with glass blown in your face by the explosion, yeah. And then you bleed to death because you can't clot.
That's right.
How long does it take for you to not be able to clot? Is it instantaneous?
It's about 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So if we had 2 to 3 weeks, we might treat those people some other way.
Exactly, like blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. You know, give people blood transfusions until those platelets come back.
Okay, so then there's a third way. Messes with your DNA?
It does mess with your DNA. That we can't solve. There are a lot of drugs out there that try to help the DNA repair itself that are being tested. So there's over 100 drugs that are in early to kind of, you know, intermediate stages of development for acute radiation sickness. It's a big program managed by the government. There's a lot of pharmaceutical companies that have drugs. Some of the drugs are already approved and used in the hospital to treat various illnesses. And we're trying to repurpose them.
This is cool. So I think it's time for some calls.
Yes. Let's go to the phones.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Annika here. And Annika, my very first question back to you is, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, Annika.
Okay, great.
And where are you calling from, Annika?
I'm calling from the University of Waterloo in Ontario, Canada.
It's glorious and free.
Yes.
You have a question.
Yeah. So I actually I had a co-op at Babcock & Wilcox, kind of the company that makes nuclear machinery for the plants. And I'm wondering, the radiation that comes from the power plant, does that actually reach the general public and like our environment? And will that have a long-term effect on us? And if it does, are there other green energy sources that could be used to reduce our fossil fuel impact?
That's a really good question. I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's the nuclear power plants are very well contained. And so, you know, this certainly should not be releasing any sort of radioactive materials into the environment.
They don't. They don't release. No. But what everybody's concerned, I think, is these three accidents that were troublesome. Yeah. And then nobody really has an intuitively good way to dispose of nuclear waste, even if it's a small amount.
That's true.
If you got to store something for hundreds or thousands of years, you're talking on timescales of the Roman Empire. I mean, it's pretty haughty to think your government's going to do as well as the Roman Empire.
But I do have a related power question following up here. What about radioactivity from coal plants? Are they significant radiation emitters?
That I don't know. That's really outside of my area of expertise. I mean, my expertise is really on, you know, what are the biological effects if there was an accident.
Well, let me ask you this.
I don't really.
Are coal miners or miners of other types unusually, or do they have a higher level of radiation exposure than the rest of us?
That's a good question. Probably.
I think black lung and those things probably predominate over anything else. I think there are other very, very high risks that probably swamp out that effect.
And then the other one I always wonder about is people who mine uranium and thorium.
They do. So they study those populations.
And what do we learn?
I'd have to go to the literature to look at that.
But it can't
be
much, or they wouldn't be allowed to have the job. Especially, if I may, Annika, in Canada. With a tradition of socialized medicine and government involvement. And so with all
so
that
I've
said,
also heard
– Yeah, go ahead, please.
I've also heard that they kind of recycle a lot of our water through the lakes as well. So I wasn't sure if the radiation is somehow getting into the lake.
I just don't think it is. In other words, that part of the nuclear industry very well controlled, very well understood and very well controlled. But what's happened historically is because nobody can agree on what to do with the nuclear waste, it's stored now at all these power plants. Yeah. And people talk about putting it in geologic structure, you know, big caves where nobody goes and it would be underground and out of sight and not out of mind, but out of range. But the infrastructure for doing that is complicated, and how do you move it through somebody's hometown without terrorists showing up and causing trouble? And you could recycle the fuel and make it even more – okay, and so on and so on. But if I understand it, Dr. Jackson, people are more afraid of radiation than they should be.
Yeah,
is that accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think you're exactly right. I mean, the nuclear power plants, they're not leaking – you know, radiation into the environment. And even if the doses would be so low that it would not cause an increase, you know, in cancer incidents amongst the population around it. So there's, in my opinion, no need to be concerned. I wouldn't be concerned.
She wouldn't be concerned. Thank you very much for your call, Annika. Enjoy the beautiful summer weather in Ontario.
Science Rules will be right back.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
You're listening to Science Rules.
Now, in a separate but unrelated issue, I think has to do with the word radiation. So we have another caller about this. Is that a true fact or a false fact?
That is a half true fact. You forgot to consider the third possibility. We got a question, and the caller could not make it onto the onto the phones to talk to us. So I will be playing the role of Johnny. So in the role of Johnny, I have a question for you. So recently, I've seen a number of videos warning us of the dangers of radiation emitted by the new 5G communication towers. There are claims of peer-reviewed studies, et cetera. Do you and do Bill, do you have an opinion on this? Have you seen the science on it, if there is? I mean, is this also a dangerous kind of radiation?
So I will say that's far outside my area of expertise. My expertise is in ionizing radiation, and that is non-ionizing radiation. You know, scientific opinion, no, I don't think it probably has any effect.
So when you say non-ionizing radiation, you mean it doesn't have enough energy to knock those electrons loose and make your make your atoms kind of chemically active.
Correct.
So the 5G system works with the same phone you have now. So it's almost certainly not going to affect anything. So there's just I'm a big skeptic, doctor. And by that I mean literally.
Me, I both, am as well.
Right on, blow it up. Both in
the no sound effect.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my goodness. yes. That's what we do when we do a fist bump with a lot of drama. You're using the same phone. There are billions of phones, and very, very few people have any effect at all. The problem is when you drop your phone, you bend down, you hurt your back. That's very dangerous. And there's a famous incident in the skeptic community. I'm in both the skeptics and the Committee for Scientific Inquiry, CSI. And there's a famous incident where there's a real estate agent in Florida, and her husband had a picture of her on her cell phone, and she got brain cancer. But correlation does not mean causation, as we say. So just because you saw this one picture of this one woman who happened to get brain cancer, which is very troubling, it doesn't mean it absolutely does not mean the phone caused it. If cell phones were really as dangerous as some of these extraordinary claimers claim, I mean, so many people would be dead or have tumors or whatever that. The amount of energy emitted and received by mobile phones is tiny. And it is not, as you say, doctor, ionizing radiation. These are not beta particles or alpha particles. It's radio wave.
But this is a great moment
to walk
through.
A very, very dim light bulb.
Yeah, to walk through the different things that people call radiation, because they do call, you know, like your Wi-Fi runs on radiation.
That's
5G
right.
Uses radiation. So what is the difference between these different types of radiation? Maybe you can kind of decode
the energy.
That.
The energy. So, you know, when we talk, you know, my area of expertise is with, you know, alpha, beta particles, gamma rays, X-rays, high energy. It can essentially knock out an electron out of its orbit, leads to an unpaired electron, you know, then those molecules.
An ion.
And now they want to find, you know, that electron somewhere else. And so they pull it from the DNA or they try to pull it from some other cellular, what we call macromolecule, and it causes damage.
You mess up the molecules in the cells, and then the cells get messed up, and you get sick, and in the worst case, you get really sick.
Exactly, and then those cells start sending out what we call danger signals. Hey, I've been attacked. And so now the neighboring cells, even if they weren't exposed to the radiation, they start putting up defenses, mounting defenses, because they're getting those fire alarms going off, you know, hey, we've got a problem.
Whenever I think about radiation, now we have sieverts. That's a measure,
Sievert's
right?
Grays.
We used to have rads.
That's right.
And sievert is a metric unit, right? And it used to be a curie. Do we still use curies?
We do, and becquerels. It depends on what type of radiation you're talking about. You know, if you're talking about, you know, radioactive decay, I focus on grays. We use grays mostly, which is one joule of energy per kilogram of tissue, which is equivalent.
There's 1,000 cc's in a liter.
Yeah.
So a kilogram of humans weigh about as much as water, right?
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
So that's a joule per kilo.
Per kilo.
Would be a millijoule per cc. Yeah. A thousandth of a joule.
Your math is better than mine.
Well, if it's that simple. Yeah. All right. So with that said, or that complicated, How do we know how much of a jolt sieverts, becquerels, rads, what's the other one?
There's a couple, like rank, yeah. Rams, Rankin equivalent men.
Okay, anyway, how do we know?
How much dose?
Yeah.
Depends. You know, if we're talking about biological dose, it's really hard to estimate. So you can estimate it by determining what we call lymphocyte depletion kinetics.
What's the first word?
Lymphocyte.
The white blood cell. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. How fast do you lose them? Or they die? Mm-hmm. So as they drop, your lymphocyte counts.
So did we do this, just to put you on the spot, were these done with primate models, as they're called?
This one's done with humans, but yeah, we do it in primate models. If we're doing primate models, you can if you're doing a controlled exposure, you can prescribe a specific dose. And in that case, we have radiation physicists who come in and they do the calculations. And then they would prescribe the same way we do it in clinical radiation therapy. You can prescribe a specific radiation dose.
To a monkey.
To a monkey. You can do it to any, yeah.
To a monkey.
Yeah, to a monkey.
But we all depend on this sort of research, right?
Yes. Yeah, we do.
Now, speaking of non-primates, well, unless you mean my old boss. Anyway, what is that? Here, where is it? There. Yeah. Is it a myth? So people at high altitude, you would expect to get more radiation. There's less atmosphere blocking charged particles from our own life-giving sun.
All right. So they have more background radiation.
Yeah. Do pilots and flight attendants get more of a jolt than the rest of us?
They certainly
do. Is it noticeable?
They do. And I think that they actually do control for that, you know, how many flights people can pilots can fly based on exposure, natural background radiation exposure. So you do get higher doses of radiation exposure when you're flying.
And the famous one is the banana.
Yes.
What happens with a banana?
I'll let you tell me.
No, but they're they have calcium.
Bananas are full of potassium.
Yeah.
And
potassium.
Yes.
I misspoke. Doggone it.
Right. So they've got some natural radioactive potassium in them, and because they're high concentration of potassium, bananas are one of the more radioactive foods.
Yeah.
So a truckload of bananas allegedly has enough radiation to set off some of these ultra-sensitive radiation detectors. I would need
That could be true.
I mean, they're
very sensitive. That's why, even after Fukushima, any of these detectors would pick up a little bit higher, doses of radiation, but it's because they're so sensitive.
So bananas are a very weak source of radiation, but they are a source of radiation.
Wow.
We have to Google that.
With that said.
What is happening, Bill?
Oh, I think that the clouds nearby are discharging their into the ground or from the ground to the cloud, superheating the atmosphere so quickly.
They're ionizing the gas and creating free radicals?
Which we smell as ozone, which is O3, but more importantly.
Oh, it's the lightning round.
Yes, the lightning round. The lightning round. So here, Dr. Warren Jackson, we are going to ask you to answer these questions.
Now.
Okay.
No. This might be the best part.
Quick questions, quick answers.
Cool.
Living at high altitude, big risk or not big risk? If I'm
not
living
a big
in Denver.
Risk.
What's your favorite form of radiation?
Oh, my favorite form? Gamma rays.
Why? Who doesn't love gamma rays?
Yes, but what do you love about gamma rays?
What I love about gamma rays, because that's what I work with.
Can you develop a pill for radiation sickness so that I can go into space and not have to worry about radiation?
A vaccine, like a type of like radiation vaccine.
A vaccine?
Well, if you talk to my boss, that's all. He's talked about that for a long time, how great it would be to be, because he believes that you could develop a vaccine to radiation.
Wow.
A vaccine to radiation.
Yeah.
So this would enable your DNA to repair themselves very repair itself very quickly?
Yeah, something like that. Well, he believes in radiation hormesis. So he thinks you could prime your cells it's all very theoretical, right?
But
that you could prime your cells.
How long would this vaccine last? Like an hour or 2 years or your whole life?
Probably years, whole life.
Okay.
Yes. Do you worry about radiation when you fly, doctor?
No.
Would you live near a nuclear power plant?
I would.
What is the best depiction of radiation in the movies or television?
Ooh.
Or what's the worst?
That's a good question. A lot of them don't do a very good job. Thread, I have not seen it, but one of my colleagues who's a radiation biologist has said that this is one of the best films because they had actual radiation biologists that consulted on the film. It came out right around the time of the day after in 1983, 84.
Yeah. One thing that comes to mind where you yelled at the screen because it bothered you so much.
The day after. It's a high level. It's really exaggerates.
What would you want to be able to see in the future with your research?
Oh, that's a good question.
Do you want everybody to have radiation awareness?
I would like to have everybody to have radiation awareness, particularly the local responders, you know, first responders at the local level. And I think with physicians, we need to do a much better job at educating our medical community that would be the ones to treat individuals who've been exposed to radiation. They need to understand what to do and how to medically manage those individuals.
All right. So if you had one thing to tell the world about radiation, what would it be?
That, you know, that there is this fear of radiation that is not proportional to the real risks of radiation.
Doctor, sounds like your work is just beginning.
It is.
Well, this has been a great discussion, Doctor. You are going to change the world by educating people about the true effects of radiation. It really is an important thing. And it's not just that both my parents had forms of cancer, and I, like anybody else, I'm concerned with cancer. I am of a certain age. People from high school are no longer living because of cancer. That's bad and something worth thinking about. But also, if we are going to embrace nuclear energy as a way to have zero carbon emission electricity in the coming years, because we got to get her done, we're going to want to understand the effects of radiation and how we manage it. And so this is as big a picture idea as you can imagine, both individual medicine and the future of planet Earth for us humans. You know, as we say, Corey, the Earth's going to be here no matter what we do.
At least for a few billion years.
Yeah,
eventually it's going away.
We want to preserve things for us right now. We have been sharing the microphones with Dr. Lauren Jackson, Associate Professor of Radiation Oncology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine.
School of Medicine.
And the Deputy Director of Translational Radiation Sciences and Director of the Medical Countermeasure Program, also at the University of Maryland.
School of Medicine.
In Baltimore, Maryland, here in the United States, planet Earth. Doctor, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about radiation. It's just been a fantastic discussion. I'm looking for a pun. It's been ionizing.
It's been rad. It has definitely been rad.
Thank you. Doggone it. It's been rad. Thank you, Dr. Jackson. I'm Bill Nye, by the way.
I'm Corey S. Powell.
And remember, when it comes to the radioactive part of our universe, science rules. And if you like Science Rules, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It helps us out. It helps us know who's listening and who's enjoying the show. And of course, it helps other people learn about the show so they can enjoy it too and turn it up loud. So thank you. Science Rules is produced by Jordan Bell. Our engineer today is Jared O'Connell. Mixing and original theme music are by Casey Halford. And special thanks to Claire Rawlinson. Chris Bannon is the CCO, the Chief Content Officer of Stitcher, where science rules.
Stitcher.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.